would say is that if you do find any errors in the scoring of the exam, do bring them to my attention so we can get those things fixed. As I did mention on Monday was the last day to withdraw, so I imagine if you're with us at this stage that your plan is to stick with this thing throughout the rest of the term. I will remind you that you do get your lowest exam score drop, so if you feel like you've choked once, hopefully that is your one time and that you will have. You'll have a drop, or if you've missed an exam, it will count as a zero, and then that would count as your exam score. I would like to remind you that when it does come to the very end, I do grade on a strict percentage, 90, 80, 70, 60, and that I do not negotiate grades. So where you wind up at the end is where you'll be. From my own experience in the past, there's no worse place to be than be on the border and be on the wrong side of the border. So do try to get yourself in a position where you can get yourself close to the grade you desire. There was here today a Redox handout that you can either pick up on the front bench or on the back. We will not be looking at that or using it until the second half of the class today. So if you didn't happen to get it, don't worry. We won't see it here until near the end of the class today. Exam 4, we did talk about yesterday. Exam 4 will cover chapters 19 and 20, and then a very small portion, 21, probably just sections 1 and 2. And then the ACS final will cover the equivalent of a full year of Gen Chem. The emphasis, of course, is probably a little bit more on the second semester. And even though you might say, well, it's been a long time since I've had Chem 1 or I had Chem 1 elsewhere, what I will say is that pretty much the skills that we've been utilizing here in the second term are ones that you learned in the first one. And so any first term things hopefully are things that will come back to you here or have come back to you as we've used them. There were a few exceptions, and we did pass out the study guide of things like on gas laws. We've not used a whole lot here in the second term, and then stuff on electron configurations and quantum numbers and such. And so if there is anything from the first term that you ought to review, it probably would be those items there. D2L quizzes. We do have chapters 19 and 20, which are going to be due on the day of our exam at 2 a.m., so next Tuesday the 5th at 2 a.m., and then this one is due on our final exam day on the 7th. So again, Tuesday, 2 a.m., this one here, Thursday, 2 a.m. One of the things I've always done in the past when I've done the web assign previously and different automated homework quizzing systems is that I've always allowed for one drop score and then one extension. I forgot to mention the extension here this time around, and some of you probably could have used it, so what I've decided to do is I'll drop your lowest two scores on WebAssign in return, so you will have your lowest two D2L quizzes dropped. And again, that's to make up for the fact that I never mentioned that I would allow one extension and one drop. So again, your lowest two D2L quizzes will be dropped. So with that introduction here in mind today, are there any questions? Any questions? Well, we're going to need our textbook today, and we should have our textbook open to a table of entropy values. And we'll find such a table on page 777 in our text.
Page 777 in our text. And at the very end of the class yesterday, we said that if we wanted to calculate the standard entropy for a particular reaction, what we'd do is we'd sum together n times the standard entropies for the products and subtract from it the sum of n times the standard entropies
for the reactants.
Now, one of the most common things is with this, just like in first semester when you dealt with delta H's, which by the way, we're going to be doing some of those here again in probably about 15 minutes. But probably the biggest mistake I see with this, using this formula, is getting the reactants and products mixed up. And so if you remember what delta stands for, delta always means to final minus initial. And so products are your final state, reactants are your initial state. So delta always means to take the final state minus the initial state.
Again, products are your final state, reactants are your initial state.
So with that in mind, let's go ahead and calculate this.
I'm looking at page 777. And so what I'm going to do, what I like to do here, is I like to write the standard entropies either right above or right below the formulas. And we'll see that the standard entropies are given in units of joules per mole dot K. And so if we look at the value for N2, it's a value of 191.6. The value for H2 is 130.6. Remember now that entropies, just like enthalpies, are state functions. And so what that means is that we should pay attention to the physical state that is present. And then we have NH3 in the gaseous phase, which is 192.7. Now before we calculate a result, remember yesterday we did predict the sign on delta S, and the sign that we predicted for delta S on this reaction would have been? Started with 4 moles of a gas, we end up with 2 moles, so the sign we'd predict would be negative. So when you do any of these calculations, you do have a way of asking yourself if your answer makes sense. And so keep that in mind when you do your calculations. So we'll go ahead and plug in the values. We're going to sum together the values of the products. It should be 2 times 192.7. And we're going to subtract from it the sum of the reactants. So we've got 1 times 191.6. plus 3 times 130.6. And I wind up with a value of negative 198.0.
No.
Negative, yes. I should have wrote that, shouldn't I? Negative. And now we'd like to figure out what the units are on this answer. What would those units be? Joules? Not per mole, but joules per Kelvin. The reason why it's joules per Kelvin, what does this 2 stand for right here? Moles. And so if we take moles
And the units on the 192.7 are joules per mole.K. What happens to the moles? They cancel out. It simply leaves us behind then with joules per Kelvin. So I personally don't care much for carrying my units through. I do like to, however, confirm what those units are, make sure that I'm consistent with my units here when I express the results. So entropies then are expressed in units of joules per Kelvin. We can also answer the question, does this answer make sense? And does it make sense? At least in part, by the sign. We did predict a sign on here that should have been negative. And a sign here that should have been negative, and we did find the negative sign.
How did you predict the sign again?
Well, what does entropy stand for? Yeah, what is, how do we define entropy? How do we define entropy? Amount of disorder. So we're going to look for the total amount of disorder. So if we could look at it, we could look at the phases. On this side here, we have gases. On this side here, we have gas. And so if we have nothing but gases, what we can do is count up the total number of moles of a gas. On this side, we have how many moles of a gas? Four. On this side, we have two. 4 moles of a gas is going to have more disorder because it's going to take up more space than would 2 moles of a gas. And so the amount of disorder would decrease, which means the sign should be negative to indicate a decreasing amount of disorder. Heather? Oh, yeah, there's plenty of cases. Yesterday we looked at a couple of different examples where at the very end here, we're looking at one like here with the calcium carbonate and forming the aqueous liquid and gases.
You still make the assumption that there's something more than one side.
No, the number, counting the total number of moles would be more applicable to if you're only dealing with the gaseous phase. But this one here, we went to look at moles. What would we look at? Well, in part, there's more important than what we ought to look at. The states, the phases. So here we have solid and aqueous. The most ordered state, of course, is which one? The solid. So here we have the most ordered state. We don't see any solids over here. We do see a gas on this side that we don't see on this side. So gases, liquids, aqueous are more disordered than any solid that we might find. And so in this case here, we'd expect an increasing amount of disorder, which is why we have the positive sign here. Okay? Anybody else? All right. Well, next up here, we're going to look at another related concept, and the related concept is that yesterday we made a statement something like this. We said that if we look at delta H minus T delta S, if this value was less than zero, what we said is that this process is going to be a spontaneous process. But if we took this same equation now and change simply the sign in here, and so one of them we had a greater than sign, another one an equals or an approximately equal zero sign, we should then also make judgments as to what would happen in each of these cases. If this quantity here is less than zero and the process is spontaneous, then if this quantity here is greater than zero, then the process must be non-spontaneous. And if it's one which the quantity delta H minus T delta S is close to zero, what do you think we'd have if it's
neither spontaneous nor non-spontaneous.
No reaction.
Well, no reaction is already up here. And which one is the no reaction?
Non-spontaneous.
Non-spontaneous. A minimum?
Yes.
Okay, we did give a name to that. It's kind of been the theme of this whole last 2 or 3 weeks. Equilibrium. Equilibrium. So this is one in which the reaction is reversible.
So this one here would go largely to products. This one here, it would remain as reactants. This one here would go back and forth between reactants and products.
Now it turns out that we have a given name to a label of G, which we call the free energy. And the free energy is going to be a very useful tool. And the way we define the free energy is like this. The free energy is defined as H minus TS. Now this does happen to be one where I know the derivation of why we use G for free energy. I didn't know for S, but I do know for G. Back when I was a student, we called it Gibbs free energy, named in honor of the person who first published results on this. And so the G stuck with it for Gibbs. But again, the free energy was defined as being the enthalpy minus the temperature times the entropy. And what is ultimately going to be most useful for us is not the value of G or the free energy, but rather the change in G or the change in free energy. And if we want to look at the change in free energy, now, the change in free energy is going to be equal to the change in enthalpy minus T times the change in entropy. And so we've seen all these other symbols already. This one here, though, then would be referred to as the change in free energy. Well, now we've already seen these labels or this exact equation before. And the place where we've seen it is, of course, right here. And so what that means is that if the change in free energy is equal to this quantity, we can go back and rewrite each one of these equations over here by using the symbol delta G. And in each of these cases, then we could say that the delta G must be less than zero, or in the second one, the delta G must be greater than zero, or in this very last one here, the delta G must be approximately equal to zero. And so the process is spontaneous whenever we have a delta G value that is negative. The process is non-spontaneous whenever we have a delta G that is positive. And we have a process that is an equilibrium process if it is approximately equal to zero. And by approximately equal to zero, we usually give the range of somewhere between about a plus 10 to a minus 10 in units of kilojoules. So somewhere kind of in this neighborhood is where we label them as approximately equilibrium processes. Now how about if we wanted to look at it in terms of standard thermodynamic conditions? What is the only change we'd have to make if we want to represent this in terms of the standard thermodynamic conditions?
How did we represent delta H under standard thermodynamic conditions? a 0 as a superscript. So you put a superscript of 0 up above.
And so if we want to show delta G under standard thermodynamic conditions, a superscript of 0. And so this would be the way that we would calculate it under standard thermodynamic conditions. Now, we already know how to calculate.
We already know how to calculate standard enthalpy changes. We already know how to calculate standard entropy changes.
And if we're dealing with standard conditions, what is T equal to? 298. Again, as a standard thermodynamic temperature. And we have to use the temperatures when we work with these in units of kelvins. So at this point, we have everything we need to calculate the standard free energy changes. However, just like with the standard enthalpies of formation and the standard entropies, we also find tables that contain the standard free energy of formation, which we define like this. This is called the standard free energy of formation. And the standard free energy of formation has a definition which looks almost identical to that of the standard enthalpies of formation. And we define it as this. It is defined as being the free energy change when one mole of a substance is formed. It's important to realize here that's one mole of substance being formed from its elements. In the reference form, under standard thermodynamic conditions. Note here too that it's from the elements in the reference form. And we have a table of those that appear in your text on page 781. And we also find a listing of those in Appendix C as well, a much more complete list. And so if we look at the way we define it, first of all, we're saying that we define it as the free energy change for one mole of a substance being formed from its elements in the reference form. And what that means is that if we go back to our table here on page 781, we're going to see that several of the standard enthalpy or standard free energies of formation have a value of 0. So we see Cl2 in the gaseous phase at 0. We see F2 at 0. We see carbon graphite at a value of 0. Calcium solid here at a value of 0. And what do all of these ones that have a value of 0 have in common with each other? Again? They're in the elemental state. And not only are they in their elemental state, but they are in what we call their reference form. And so by the reference form, we typically mean the most common allotrope of that element.
And in the case of oxygen, we might say that oxygen has three different allotropes. The three allotropes of oxygen are O, which is individual oxygen atoms, O2, which is the diatomic oxygen, and O3, which is ozone. But the most common allotrope of oxygen is O2. And so we refer to that as the reference form of oxygen. And so what you're expected to know, and this is one of those things where, there's lots of things, I guess, that I think you're expected to know.
I would expect that you know your diatomic elements. And I don't know if I mentioned this on day one in here, but or day two, there's a little mnemonic to know your diatomic elements, and that is Honkel Briff. And so they're H2, O2, N2, Cl2, Br2, I2, and F2. And these are the reference forms for these elements. You should also know the reference form for carbon as being graphite. And you should know the reference form of phosphorus as being P4. And the reference form of sulfur as being S8.
All the rest of the elements we find in their monoatomic state. And so calcium, that's why we see it written here in this table as Ca solid, because it is the monoatomic form. So come ACS final time and come exam 4 time, I would expect that you know the reference forms of the elements here, as these being the most common allotropes for these elements. And again, for each one of these here, you would expect to find a delta G of formation, a standard free energy of formation, equal to 0. Well, then when it comes to calculating the standard free energy change, we're going to see something that looks very familiar, because now this will be the third time you would have seen a formula like this. We'd say that the standard free energy change would be equal to the n sum of the number of moles times the free energies of formation for the products minus the sum of n times the standard free energies of formation for the reactants.
And if you have trouble, like I sometimes had when I was a student, about getting these things mixed up, always remember that delta means final minus initial. It's a change. Take the final state minus the initial state.
So products are the final state, reactants are the initial state. So given this, let's look at a balanced chemical equation. And I'd like one that's not too complex here. So let's see if we can find a not too complex equation. Let's look at the combustion of methane. Methane in the gaseous phase reacts with O2 in the gaseous phase to yield carbon dioxide in the gaseous phase plus H2O in the gaseous phase. And when we combust them, we yield the gas. And so the products here look right. We need to balance this. To put in a 2 here, and it looks like a 2 here. And so, what I'd like for you to do with this equation is this. I'd like for you to calculate the standard free energy change using 2 different methods. And compare the answer. The 2 different methods, of course, one of them is this method right here, and the second method would be this one right here. So we'll go ahead and calculate the standard free energy change for this reaction using the 2 different methods. I'm going to give you about
10 minutes or so to do that.